You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsome.
Welcome again for another Physics Ed Podcast. No matter where you are around this world of ours, I hope you're doing well. And today, we're talking with some really good friends of ours from Plants for Space, which is the Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence, which commenced in January 2024 to really look at reimagining plant design by resource production through the lens of space. And this is not just to enable off-Earth habitation, but also to improve on-Earth sustainability. It's a really, really lofty goal, and the beauty about it is it's happening here in Australia. And from an education perspective, there's a variety of different outreach initiatives that you can get involved in. And today, we're going to hear just from exactly what it's all about with Fraser Thorpe and Lieke Vanderhorst, who will go through exactly through what Plants for Space is, how Plants for Space are important for us as humans on Earth, and as educators, how we can get involved.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech, and more. To see 100 fun, free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S. And click 100 free experiments.
So I'm Fraser Thorpe. I'm the Education and Engagement Manager for Plants for Space. So it's my job to tell some of the stories of Plants for Space. And essentially, we're a research hub that collaborates with industry and multinational universities to try and think about how can we grow plants in space, right? So it's a nuts idea, but those ideas that we test out, that are good enough for space, actually, a lot of those ideas we can bring back down to Earth and think about how we can grow plants even better on Earth. So some of the things that we're trying to achieve are thinking about how can we make plants as best they can and the conditions to grow as best they can as well, and thinking about how nutritious they might be as well.
It's a big, big job. Considering, and I know how wide your consortium is, it's quite good. Lieke, what do you do within this role?
So I'm the communications manager and engagement officer for the South Australian node for Plants for Space. So I'm pretty much overseeing all of the communication that Plants for Space is trying to get out there, well, globally, pretty much, and ensuring that if there's any cool events or outreach programs happening here, specifically in South Australia, that I will be on top of that.
It's so fantastic. As I think about, as people listening in, as they're driving the car, walking the dog, whatever they might be doing, we all understand what plants do. They grow and they're kind of useful for us as humans. This doesn't change as we go to space. It doesn't change in low Earth orbit, nor does it change on the moon, nor anywhere else. What does this work look like for the people who are uninitiated? What does this sort of work look like? I'm just curious. Fraser.
Yeah, it's a great point. For thousands of years, we've been growing crops in fields. I guess in more recent years, people have been trying to grow things kind of indoors in vertical farms, right? And the same idea about growing them in space is exactly the same principle, right? So you're thinking about all of the things that plants need and about growing the best plants we can possibly grow, right? But this is actually taking them into space offers new challenges. It actually is like a sandpit, a playground, a test ground to try out new things and really put it through an innovation gauntlet. We're trying to think about how do we grow plants on, say, the moon to sustain life for a year, right? So it gives us a real chance to reimagine what farming could be, right? So we're thinking about, can plants grow medicines? Can they provide the materials we need? Can they provide the foods we need? Like whether this be pick and eat or, maybe it's something that actually like reinventing what food even looks like and how we process that. So it's an opportunity to think about what we're doing now and think about how we can make it even better, but more importantly, make it really sustainable. Because what space offers is basically a closed environment. You've got to make use of absolutely all of those materials and resources that you take with you. So we're thinking about recycling and those sorts of things too.
Well, I think about the communication side on this side too. There is a lot of interest from an education standpoint on this as well, Lieke. There would be a lot of classrooms who have done various versions of growth experiments and things. But, when we start talking about what it's like to grow something in regolith, something in microgravity, and it may not necessarily be wheat or something. It could be an something that's in, an aquatic environment. I mean, so how do we sort of help students sort of get their head around these big concepts, microgravity, regolith, all this stuff, and make it tangible to their everyday lives?
They are great questions because properly knowing how to grow stuff in things like regolith is not really something that we are very good at the moment. There's definitely some really exciting research going on about that, but it's not going to be the new addition to your soil in your backyard, pretty much. To really understand how we see these larger concepts, well, we can make use of certain types of robotics where we can actually look at, can we make a plant think that it's in microgravity? So we're thinking about things like random positioning machines. So we can really kind of confuse a plant when it knows where up or down is and how to really grow its roots properly. But also, it's really important for students to think outside the box. So it's very standard to get your bit of soil and plant a seed in there, and that's how we grow. But we'll be thinking about things like aeroponics and hydroponics and different types of soil simulants, pretty much. So we're really kind of stepping away from that idea of this is just your little pot of soil and you grow your seed into a seedling. And also really to drive home that message of what you've got is all you have to work with. I always like to get students to think of this idea of, look, just think of the very longest road trip you've ever done, but really understand that you can't get out of that car. Everything that you've packed is everything you have. And I will always ask them, look, what are the things that you bring, and how can you ensure that you can continue to produce new products out of that potentially? And if you ask what to bring, there's always people that say, oh, well, we might bring money. And it's really to flick that switch and say, no, there is no Uber Eats, there is no on-demand grocery deliveries. It really is very close, and circularity is like a great concept to really start thinking about it in that way.
It's funny as you say that. I started thinking about what would be the currency, and my brain started thinking, well, nitrogen's kind of a good currency. Potassium might be handy. Maybe some trace elements. Maybe they might have some value. I mean, it's a different world. I mean, what do we value? And I mean, you can't eat cash, I've heard, but you certainly. I mean, we need play. But it's not just about food. As we think about this, I mean, we can think about all the fiber that's produced and all the uses that plants have done for our world. I mean, it's really, really fantastic. And I'm just sort of thinking about the work phrase that that I've seen before with what you get up to with NASA with setting up some of these growth chambers that are connected. I'd love to know a little bit more about those.
Yeah, I mean, Lika before mentioned the thinking outside the box. Well, this is actually growing plants inside a box, all right? So this is a plant grow box that we actually send to different schools. And within this box, we actually encourage the students and the teachers to set up an experiment that NASA's kind of designed. And the students grow plants within this box. And then are they following the kind of procedure of what NASA set out, and then they actually supply some of that data to the NASA scientists to guide which plants would be great and the conditions in which they grow best in space, right? So this is like almost citizen science-based approach to growing plants within a space context, which is amazing. And then we encourage the students to actually take it to the next step. Maybe try different plants, maybe try different conditions, maybe trying that microgravity simulator as well, or maybe it's about different nutrient contents and those sorts of ideas. But just to pick up on some of that point that you were thinking about before about what else they could offer, I think it's a really important point to get people to be working with plants. I mean, if you're thinking about space as a context to be growing plants, and this idea of biophilia, this joy of being around nature and actually tending these plants, I think it's a really important thing. And I think getting students involved with that's really cool as well. I remember seeing a picture from one of the NASA researchers about how one of the astronauts there tending the plants, and they were picking some flowers that they'd grown within one of these kind of grow boxes. And actually, they made a little posy for Valentine's Day, and they all got together around the little kind of space table. And you could see in the window the porthole behind them, kind of Earth in the backdrop. So I think there's something really beautiful about being around plants and encouraging them to grow as well.
Oh, I mean, I think about the work at the high seas environment in Hawaii, whereby we're doing this work in, a simulated Martian environment. Yeah, we can survive. We can bring the nutrients. We can bring the things that might grow. It might feel good from a, hey, we're food, we're fed, we're watered, we've got a bed, we should be happy. And yet we found out we're not, because the human brain likes more than that. And it's very much required. And so I think about these growing spaces. I mean, these vertical gardens. I mean, it's, which way's up when you're talking in Melbourne? But anyway, that's a separate story. These may well be the places that people are going to want to hang out in, I suspect.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that Fraser was saying before as well, just growing plants and it really gives you more insight as well into where all of this research is going in terms of if you're growing a plant and say, for example, you're growing a tomato plant and you get a beautiful crop off of it and you use all these tomatoes and you're kind of stuck at the end with all of this like leafy material that you can't really do anything with. That's something that you really need to account for in space as well, because you kind of want to be able to do something with that. So we might be looking into growing crops that will actually give you like absolute bumper crops of, say, tomatoes, but just don't really produce that much leafy stuff. Or maybe we want to see if we can actually transform that leafy stuff into something else. Like maybe it would be a great basis for fiber as well. Or maybe we can actually change something in the plant so that this leafy material would actually be something that we'd like to eat as well. So it's really like another aspect of just working with plants, getting that mindset of, well, what is useful in this? What is good about this? What helps my soil as well? What different crops can I grow that might be beneficial in that way if you're looking at like an aeroponic or a well, hydroponic setup for that? So I think really just growing plants and getting busy with that just gives you this big understanding of what it's actually what it actually means to grow your own food and to be self-sufficient in that way, and also how that can support like circularity here on Earth.
And it's great that you picked that up, because I think about the UN SDGs. I mean, yes, we can be outward looking out into space, but the reality is it's meant to benefit the, several billion people who are down here on Earth. Sort of useful, sort of important. And it makes me think about the students that we get to impact with these projects. And in this case, you are an ARC Center for Excellence. I mean, this is real research to get real things out into space and support these missions. And the students who are listening to the teachers who might be listening to this, and potentially going to be these researchers, these engineers, these people who might be working into these environments. I'm thinking about agritech is where my head's thinking. I mean, there's a lot of misconceptions around what agriculture really is in the 21st century. It's not really Farmer Joe with a hat out in the field anymore. There's a lot more to it than that. I mean, as I think about those, the self-contained boxes as you were describing, Fraser. I mean, there is a particular wavelength of light going onto these plants. This does matter. I mean, as I think about this, the career pathways into getting plants into space, it's more than just growing something. I mean, how broad is this, Fraser? I'm just curious.
I mean, just to give you a flavor of the types of researchers, and this is just the research profile that that Plants for Space have. We have, plant geneticists. We've got kind of some plant breeders. We've got engineers, both chemical and there's a psychologist. There's lawyers. There's a whole range of different people. Kind of agricultural technologists using kind of AI software to understand people's responses to these different types of foods that might be available. Understanding the different kind of sensory and flavor profiles that plants might have in different aspects. So when you're thinking about what Plants for Space represents, it's so much more than just plant biology. It's actually about, well, it's about the plants themselves and what we can do with them. So yes, some plant biology is definitely part of it. But then thinking about that as like on the larger scale, this comes into the farming. So like, what are we trying to produce? What's the best way of producing this? There's a lot of research to be done there, and the actual doing, making products and selling those products as well. And that's supported by all these different technologies, whether they're being developed, like robotic farming, whether they're weeding and whether they're analyzing the health conditions of the plants. Like the robots need to be made and designed and coded. And then the people need to support that as well. So that's just a little flavor of the different kind of elements that could be supported in this.
Oh, for
And
sure.
then of course the education side, I think too, people need to be supported to be able to do all of these different things, whether it's robotics, plants, or chemistry.
G'day, it's Ben here. I hope you're enjoying this particular chat. And guess what? There's so much more you can do with your science teaching. Head on over to physicseducation.com.au. There are complete and comprehensive teaching units that you can get your hands on. If you click on the top, you will find there are a whole bunch of scope and sequences, cross-curricular teaching ideas, hundreds of printable experiments and activities, videos, risk assessments, marking rubrics, you name it. It's all there and it's all linked to the curriculum, and it's something that you can implement right now. Head on over to physicseducation.com.au and check out what's on offer.
Oh, for sure. I mean, as you mentioned, chemistry, I'm just thinking, I mean, our work just picked up a brand new 3D printer, and some of those materials are, funnily enough, plant-based. I mean, so this could be of use. But gets me thinking, I mean, certainly plant biology, but microbiology as well, from a symbiont point of view, especially if we look towards what's happening on lunar regolith. I mean, you often speak with students. I mean, I know teachers listening to this will have heard this too. Kids will say soil, they'll say dirt in a heartbeat. And the reality is there's a lot of components to said dirt, to said soil. And some of this is the microbiome and how it works in terms of fixing nitrogen and all these things that then makes it readily available to us. There are a lot of different ways, and I can see why underneath the belt, Plans for Space, ARC, Center of Excellence, which is this big, long title, there's a lot of organizations involved in this. I mean, Lika, I mean, just to get help people understand about what is an ARC Center of Excellence like, I mean, what different groups are working with this project?
So we our main body of researchers, so what we call our chief investigators, they are located at five different universities here in Australia. So we have University of Western Australia, University of Adelaide, University of Flinders here in South Australia as well, La Trobe University, and University of Melbourne. So that is pretty much our chief investigators. So that's I think about 16 of them. Then within their investigating groups and their research groups, they have their postdocs and their PhDs. I think at the moment we're currently at around 60 or 70 in total in terms of researchers for that alone. But then that is pretty much just our main body of researchers, but they all work together with these international institutions, which can be different universities, which can be different companies that are working in controlled environmental agriculture, different space agencies, things like NASA and JAXA, the European Space Agency. So it's really very involved, actually. And it's such a pleasure and such a great thing to be able to actually work with all these amazing people that are doing all this like absolute groundbreaking work.
Which
So it's a very interesting group and very global as well.
makes me think about, as an educator, I mean, I always want my students to get as close as possible to the real thing. So this makes me think about the structure of what you just described in just a very short period, a lot of work and a lot of connections and a lot of interrelationships and collaborative effort to make this thing work. It makes me think about across a grade level, it brings an opportunity to produce effectively the same thing. I mean, I'm thinking about, well, what if I did have, okay, you student, you're gonna be Israel, and now you're gonna be JAXA, and you're gonna be what, and try and create how might we function to be chief investigators on a particular topic. And of course, there's lots of different research topics that schools can investigate, but it's not just the science. It's all the mechanisms around it that make this thing actually work. I mean, I'm just always thinking, Fraser, I mean, what would be your advice for teachers of any level, whether it's primary, middle school, high school, or elementary, whatever they might be, or they might be tertiary educators who want students to really get how the work that your team does? I mean, What are the initial steps, I suppose, as I give you a very large question in a short space?
Absolutely. I think what Plants to Space can offer school teachers and students themselves is a vehicle to explore what STEM and future world of work can look like. Okay. And what I mean by that is that we're offering such a vehicle to explore. Like most classroom teachers are going to be growing plants in some way at some time of their lives. But what we can offer is a really interesting and authentic context that's actually really exciting. And it is happening. So, it's beyond just growing a plant in the classroom. This is now growing a plant in the classroom that's emulating this international, well, interplanetary endeavor. There's really strong role models in there and different avenues you can take it, whether it is to the science, tech, engineering, and maths or beyond, right? And probably including medicine and more, right? Anything you choose to take it into. But what it provides is that kind of authentic hook to attached to the experiments that are already been doing, whether that's the scientific method or whether that's building a robot,
I love this. And so inevitably there's going to be some people who would love to know more, just a little bit more. They'd love to love to know a lot more. So Lika, how might they get in touch?
Well, we have a very easy website address, which is plantsforspace.com. You can spell it FOR, or you can actually just pop a little number four in there. Doesn't really matter. And we're actually working on like a proper version of that now. At the moment, we've got a holding page. So we have a little bit about our team, pretty much a team of chief investigators that I spoke about. So you can really get a feel of what their different backgrounds are and what their focus in is in Plants for Space. But then we also have our missions described. So pretty much the four different missions that we're working under to really encapsulate all of these uses of plants for food and fiber and medication and everything that you might need when you're on this amazing long trip without access to anything else apart from what you took with. And that's pretty much and a very big list of our partners as well. So if you're really interested in a specific side of Plants for Space, then that would be a good place to start as well. So we're hoping in the next month or two to really have our website properly up and running, our new website. And I think we'll be looking at developing teacher support and student materials for that new website as well. I think that would be a little bit further down the line still, though. But we're definitely aiming to update our site with all of the very interesting news and publications that we're working on as well. And there will be lots of ways to contact us through that. We're also on social media. I mean, find us on LinkedIn and Instagram and Facebook. We're trying to post as many of like our publications and recent news and events as well. So yeah, find us there.
Well, Lika, I was just thinking it might be you were talking about kind of publications and those sorts of things. It kind of lent onto that idea of the Leaf Project as well. Might be a kind of an interesting hook to mention as well.
Oh, absolutely. So LEAF is Lunar Effects on Agriculture. Oh, this is really bad. I keep missing the F. But it is part of the Artemis mission. So it's an investigation to see if we can actually send plants up to the moon, leave them there for a little bit, and then actually return them back to Earth as well. So we can actually have a proper look to see what that little time spent on the moon actually did to these plants, to actually also go up from little seeds to seedlings, and to see what radiation did to these plants and the actual travel up there and back, which is pretty much a world first. There's been efforts to grow plants on the moon before, but to actually bring them back to Earth and do some rigorous study on them, that's not done before. So that's very exciting.
This is happening in the next couple of years. So, I was talking about context for students before. This is happening. This is being launched in the next couple of years, and within students' lifespan, there will be kind of moon bases and potentially even, Mars landings as well. So, this is where it's at.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, okay, it means time stamping my lifetime. How, but I mean, I've always thought, because I grew up in the period of hearing about the Apollo era and seeing those grainy black and white, almost staccato images that we got to see of, you know, people bouncing around the moon, sort of. And, oh, wow, that's awesome. And now we're going to see this not even 4K. It's going to be in 8K or some crazy amount of high definition and 3D and VR and AR and every other R, because it's going to be amazingly real, so much real. It's going to go, oh, my gosh, this is like, This is a whole other world with the Artemis missions, for sure. And I think about, I mean, inevitably there's an evolution of the content that will come out. I mean, yes, we know that the website is a holding pattern now. However, there is a lot of research coming out there. And with that comes a lot of teacher support material, which means inevitably, as you listen to this, there will be more stuff on this after we've press stop on this particular episode, without a doubt. I mean, that the thinking about growing things in lunar regolith and bring it back was amazing, because there's also the opportunity to look at the genomics. I mean, there's going to be some really interesting mutagenic qualities that have happened with that radiation smashing into it, and especially if it was, you know, where was it grown, and, you know, what was this tolerant? There's a lot of stuff there. I could ramble for a bit, so I won't, but the it'd be extraordinary. So look, thank you very much, Fraser and Leica, for jumping on in. And again, if you're listening on in, if you're wondering about that, just go to the podcast site. You'll see that the links will be there on the show notes. Click on it and go find out how you might be able to use this. And if you do something really interesting with it, let them know, because I'm sure they'd love to know what you might do with it too. So, look, thank you very much for your time, guys.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great chatting with you.
We hope you've been enjoying the Physics Ed podcast. We love making science make sense. Why don't you book us for a science show or workshop in your school? If you're outside of Australia, you can connect with us via a virtual excursion. See our website for more.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Fraser and Leica. I certainly did. There is a lot of opportunities for us as educators to get involved with Plants for Space. So if you want to go find out a little bit more, go onto the website, which is plantsforspace.com. So plants, then the number 4, space.com, plantsforspace.com. And you can find out exactly what this Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence is doing in terms of helping us look at long-term off-Earth habitation, because it's a serious thing. It's on the horizon. And we're looking with the Artemis missions by 2028. This is a real, real, seriously on the doorstep opportunity. And students are going to love this for sure. And so go check it out. So I hope you enjoyed this chat. I certainly did. And there are more coming up on the Physics Ed podcast. And I hope to catch you another time.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
This podcast is part of the Australian Educators Online Network. AEON.net.au